Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, a show for marketers by marketers to talk shop and share insights on the ever-changing landscape of the digital world. My name is Katya, and I'm your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. In every episode, we aim to help marketers maximize their potential by getting real with industry experts across multiple industries and disciplines. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy, we talk through it all and leave you with actionable tips to help you in day-to-day marketing. Now, today's guest is David. He is the co-founder and CEO of the InBeat Agency, a micro-influencer agency that helps brands scale their marketing efforts. They've helped leading D2C brands such as Nordstrom, Wildfang, and Soylent to harness the power of micro-influencers. So put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for my guest today, David. David, welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast. I'm really excited to have you on today to be just kind of talking about something I'm really passionate about, influencer marketing, but more specifically, micro-influencers and how you can use them to scale your business.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Well, let's get started with having you share a little bit about who you are and how you got into influencer marketing to begin with. It's really interesting to hear people's journey into this world.
Sure thing. So we started as an SEO agency 6 years back now. Always get that time frame kind of wrong. Time flies so fast.
Feels like forever ago.
Yeah, exactly. We were building backlinks for client. Client approached us and said, hey, I want to dabble with this micro influencer thing. Could you guys help me out? So we took a look at it, realized, oh, wow, this is actually really a lot like link building. So there's a short sales cycle where we negotiate with micro influencers, onboard them, ship them product and so forth. So we scoped out a kind of process and we ran with it. And turns out now we strictly do micro influencer marketing because it worked so well. And here we are today running a micro influencer agency.
Nice. Now, before we unpack the why behind honing in on micro-influencers, I like to get down to the basics and when it comes to this, because I think everybody defines it differently. How do you define influencer?
Yeah. So for us, a micro-influencer, we go by platform. So on Instagram, we treat them as typically 5K to 25K followers, but that's a ballpark estimate. It can vary greatly. You know, for some clients, micro-influencers will tend to be anywhere from, you know, 10K to 100K on Instagram. But for our sake of this discussion, let's make a micro influencer on Instagram 5K to 25K. Okay. On TikTok, we boost that follower count significantly because TikTok just has this tendency to give everyone more followers. So we treat micro influencers on there as anyone with 100K to 250K followers. And on YouTube, we're looking at 10K to 100K is where we're landing. So those are the really three platforms that we work with. And that's our definition internally of what we consider micro influencers.
Excellent. So you really define influencers by follower count. Is there any other attribute that you believe that an influencer has to have aside from that?
So we do look at engagement rate, but it's one of those tricky metrics because so many people falsify it in some way or another. They use engagement groups. They'll use like boosters. I don't know what they call it now, but you know, there's tons of ways people falsify these metrics. So it makes it hard to kind of judge with engagement rate, as well as the follower count is quite falsifiable too.
Yeah.
What we look for on our end is really qualitative. We look for good content that really resonates, and that's what we look for. We make the assumption that if someone is creating good content, then their engagement is going to be good by definition. Of course, we do use some quantitative filters to remove kind of useless vetting on our part, but that's really where we stand with that.
How do you actually evaluate for qualitative?
Yeah, I mean, there's a spot check to do, right? And it gets wanky when you work in different cultures and, you know, it gets weird.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you know, just pleasing and just looks good. Good photography, engaging. The captions are you know, engaging as well. So that's how we evaluate for it. But there is definitely a qualitative check. The way we train people on our team is like, you know, we have this kind of like Tinder. This is good. This is bad. And you know, we just try to get people to understand what good quality content means. But it's hard. It's hard. Yeah, it is a tough one.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It is a challenge to be able to identify the qualitative metrics or the qualitative attributes, not metrics, the qualitative attributes that can really define what good content is, right? And it definitely depends on like whatever the brand is. But it's interesting because your approach sounds very transactional because it sounds like you have a bit of a checklist to go through to identify those right, you know, those right influencers. Yep. I would like to unpack the why you've focused on micro influencers. Why is that a sweet spot?
Because it ends up being a numbers game, and I really appreciate that. So the way we look at it, first step of our vetting process is extremely transactional. We give you a first shot at this as a micro influencer. Mm-hmm. We bring you in, and then, you know, if you create great content, if you drive sales, whatever the KPI is for our campaign, then we will onboard you as an ambassador, right? And at that point, we'll work with you on an ongoing basis and treat you as such. We'll build a relationship from there, because if you only treat it as transactionals, you're going to be extremely limited in what you can accomplish. So yeah.
That's interesting. I'm really glad that you clarified that it's just from the beginning that it is transactional and then it turns into relationship, which I would imagine you have to be able to just kind of categorize and, you know, identify who are the quote unquote winners after each campaign.
That's right.
How do you work with, so you're very focused on micro influencers. Do you not work with any other types of influencers? And if not, why is that?
We do, but not a lot. When we do, it's more of a function of we don't have a choice, right? They're picking an agency. They want to do both. And then, you know, we have to substitute in there, do macro influencers. But we don't like dealing with macro influencers, to be honest. There's a whole agent process. There's the whole kind of going through the negotiation, which is a bit more complex. And it just takes more time on our team's part. We don't enjoy it all that much. We will partner with other agencies that have these rosters so that it simplifies our work. But micro influencer is really what we decided to focus on, just because it's a skill set in its own right. And it becomes, you know, hard to build processes for macro influencers and micro influencers differently. They're extremely different processes. Both of these are completely different. Like, they're miles and light years away of one another. Even though they look very similar, they are not at all.
What is so different about them? Is it just the go-between person between and that macro influencer?
Yeah, exactly.
Or are there other differences?
Negotiation process, it's a lot less of a numbers game. You don't have as many people you can make a bet on with a given budget. So if you approach it with a $50,000 budget, if you go towards micro influencers, you can give a lot of shots, right? You can try with a lot of micro influencers under that budget. But with macro influencers, that can run you, you know, three collaborations. And then if one or two of them strikes out, then you didn't get any repercussion with your budget. So it becomes a lot. There's a lot of pre-work to do on these kind of collaborations, understanding like what are our chances of success with these influencers, whereas with micro influencers, we can make educated guests and, you know, the numbers will show us who's winning for us. And yeah, that's the big difference that I see.
Interesting. Okay. So you said numbers, and where my head goes is ROI, the return on investment on influencer marketing. We always are always looking at the sale, right? Like that one for one, you know, this influencer posted and I can track this back. You know, I've got great attribution. I can track this back and this influencer got me this many sales, right? X amount of sales. And that's my return on investment. I also know that return on investment has to do with like the halo effect of influencer marketing too, right? Like there are a lot of people that just don't make their initial purchase based on like one specific image, right? So you kind of have to have this omni-channel approach. But I'd be interested in hearing how you define a return on investment and how you measure that if it's not with a sale.
For some brands, and it will really depend, as you said, their halo effect of influencers, right? You know, I'm thinking of bigger brands like 8Sleep, right? That's being shouted out on every podcast and so forth, you know, and they're on every YouTube video. And, you know, at some point, like who do you attribute the purchase to, right? And
yeah.
When you end up making that purchase, but for smaller items, you know, in the range of like $100, $50, even up to $150, you can do direct attribution with a coupon code with these influencers and get a good sense of like, okay, what's my return on ad spend, to borrow a metric from the kind of paid media world. you can do that. Having said that, you know, when we do these micro influencer programs, 75%, 80% of the influencers won't drive the result, won't drive a positive ROI from a sales perspective strictly. But those 20% that do, you want to retain them and keep a relationship with them and just build that program out. So how do we measure ROI? We look at the campaign goals in the sense that, you know, if your goal is creating user-generated content, influencer-generated content to run your paid media, and your influencers are creating paid media visuals that convert better than what you have, then that's a positive ROI, right? So content production is a very big part of like, okay, what's this costing me for content? And then direct sales. And after that, you're going to look at your follower growth, how many mentions are you getting in Google? But then again, that's going to depend on so many channels. So not a good one to track if you're running many different marketing efforts.
Yeah.
But overall, direct attribution and, you know, content is really where the ROIs is. We try to squeeze out some more value by asking influencers specific questions while we onboard them to ensure that we get the best kind of return for our clients. This can be market research specific questions like, hey, what are the trends that we should be aware of that we are not? If you were marketing director at our company, how would you change the packaging experience, right? We ask questions like that just to get as much value as possible from it.
I feel like that's a great tip for anybody who's listening on how else you can leverage, you know, the influencers or the creators that you have in your roster in general. They are a wealth of information. Absolutely. Now, I know that you are an agency and you're obviously focused on micro influencers. Do you also manage other marketing initiatives? Do you handle paid and organic? I think what I'm more looking for here is how you communicate with the larger marketing department, or maybe it's the smaller marketing department, if you're focused just solely on influencer marketing.
Yeah. So by a function of just how these marketing departments operate, we started doing paid because you just don't have a choice. They go hand in hand. You know, we kind of were like focused on, hey, let's do micro influencer. We got into paid. We got into TikTok ads, Snapchat ads, and, you know, we got into Facebook and Instagram ads just because we had to. Although we run our Facebook and Instagram ads through a partner because we don't want to touch that. TikTok and Snapchat was just an easy one for us to grab because there's not that many people doing it. Yeah. But yeah, you just don't have a choice. These departments don't separate all that much between the influencer component and the paid component. They view it under the kind of social media marketing budget, and it just falls under there. We don't have a choice in that sense of like doing like, hey, let's amplify. And additionally, just by the nature of these platforms that allow you to whitelist influencers' content, run ads on it, it just doesn't make sense to break the relationship we have with the influencer to hand it off to another partner who's going to handle it. So that's why we do it like that.
How do you set up your strategy being an agency and being disconnected from an overall marketing strategy? Or is there communication of what the marketing department is trying to achieve?
There's always communication of what the marketing department is trying to achieve, or else it doesn't make sense. Usually these strategies fall into, you know, a bigger strategy. So what's our component? What are we responsible for? What's the goal of our kind of piece? Are we looking to create massive amounts of content? Are we looking to viral up some kind of challenge on TikTok? Like, what is the challenge? What are we doing? And we have to understand that just to make sure that we can align like the influencer. If the messaging on one side of the campaign is something and we say something completely different through our influencers, then that doesn't make any sense for the company. So we really make sure that we align with, you know, any other marketing initiatives inside the company. Plus, there's tons of hidden value there, right? If there's other marketing initiatives, it's like, hey, guys, we can use these micro influencers, you know, those email push. You should use UGC in there. Hey, those paid media, you know, like you have a paid media team on board. Hey, you know, let us send the content folder with all the assets, and then you know, let us communicate and integrate with all these different marketing efforts. Because when you synergize like that, it becomes the best way for people to leverage micro influencers.
Yeah, that's really great to hear. I think oftentimes people miss out on bridging the gap between what you're doing with influencer marketing to the overall marketing strategy, right?
Yeah.
There's so much that you can do with just the user-generated content, the influencer-generated content that can really help you maximize the efforts across website and email and everything in between, and organic, obviously. I am really curious. You did mention TikTok and that it's by nature, you guys have to be part of it and are doing it, and not a lot of people are doing it in the space. Do you have kind of any fun learnings that you have seen while trying to execute influencer marketing on TikTok?
So product placement, extremely hard on TikTok, extremely hard. Like, just an ad, a blatant ad is not going to work. Like, your product has to be subtle in a way that, you know, the video can get views and get excitement, get hyped up around, because or else you're done for. If you try to put the product at the center of the video, it's really hard. There's always this kind of, like, you know, these products that are TikTok friendly, right? You're like, oh yeah, these products will crush it on TikTok, you know, but for most direct-to-consumer brands, the playbook with TikTok is like, hey, you know, have these influencers create ads and run budget on top of it, because it's extremely hard for a video to get the same view count that you should expect from an influencer if you put the product as the center. So that's what's really hard about TikTok.
I was going to say, I am really curious how much direction you give influencers.
Not that much, because we assume, like, so, you know, if you pick your influencers based on their content quality, like, they have something to teach us about TikTok, right? They spend a lot more time on TikTok than I ever will. So, you know, how can I assume that I know how to grab their audience's attention more than they can, right? That's how we view it. Get the most creative freedom to the influencer. Here are the benefits we want you to put forward. Make sure to include these in your video. And by the way, here are some examples of videos that we really like. So, you know, run with it, create stuff. And if something is off, they say they misspelled the brand name or whatever, we give editorial feedback afterwards, but nothing like, hey, you know, we want you to read this script and do that. Although some clients approach us with that, we try to break that habit of, like, guys, like, let's stay away from the written scripts, give them high level guidance and let them run with it. They spend 8 hours a day on TikTok, you know, like, let's trust them, right?
They know the trends. They know the trends. Yeah. They know the songs that are trending, the hashtags, you know, how they want to be able to put it together as well too. They are essentially the design team.
It's crazy because TikTok is creating this generation of people that understand attention from a fundamental level. I'm blown away versus Instagram, which is very different in terms of the platform algorithm. TikTok is, people understand attention. Like, they do attention grabbing kind of beginning of the video. Everything is like marketing perfect. And it's like, wow, this is crazy. So yeah, we let them run with it.
We're breeding new marketers with every single platform. And I feel like every app that is out there that makes editing video, because video is so huge as well too. It makes editing video and then posting the video on social, and, you know, cross collaboration between networks as well too. What you do on, you know, what you do on TikTok is something that you can use on your Instagram reels and vice versa, right? All feeding into the algorithm. Now, do you think that there is any risks involved in leveraging influencers?
In what sense?
Do you have a few? No, I'd love for you to share them.
Brand safety. The bigger brands are really scared about that. You know, like, are they going to massacre my brand? Does this influencer have an OnlyFans and we didn't know about it and they're going to promote our brand? There's tons of risks around that. So when we work with bigger brands, like, brand safety comes up so often. Like, how do we reach out to them? What kind of data we have and so forth, right? So That's a big risk for bigger brands. But then again, when I look at that, you know, it's like, so many people post about your brand without you caring, right? And it's just becoming hard for these brands to have control of their brand on social media. They don't create the discussion like they used to, right? In a decentralized social media world, they don't create the discussion like they used to through TV ads. Now, you know, Anakin is getting, you know, how many people per day tagging them, right? And that's the brand. Like, that's the brand. And they're not approving this content. They're not denying it, right? So that's one of the risks. Brand safety is one that we see a lot. Then after that, you know, it's a relationship game, right? So it's like, you want to keep these relationships healthy. That's another big risk. You know, you don't want to massacre any relationships, because then they can go on social media, because they're on social media.
Absolutely.
And butcher your brand, right? Again, falls under that brand safety. So really have like a kind of a crisis mode team ready to respond, because, you know, sometimes they do get mad, right? I remember a campaign where, you know, influencers go to the store to buy the product, CPG brand product isn't there. They make a story, like, you know, and then they mention, and I'm like, and then we have to call them, right? And like, you know, guys, like, c- calm down, you know, like, can you take this story off and so forth, right? They did, of course, but, you know, you have to be ready to assume these kinds of risks. You can't control them. Even if you have them sign an agreement, you know, they don't even realize what they're signing. So anyway, it's just, yeah, those are things that I see that are the risks for, especially for bigger brands. I think smaller brands could care less and get the huge upside from it, but
yeah,
bigger brand doing something wrong just gets more coverage. That's how it is.
How would you say you would mitigate some of those risks? Like, what comes to mind for me is really investing in the time to ensure that you are finding those right creators or influencers for your brand would be definitely one of them. But do you have thoughts on how to just kind of mitigate?
Yeah, you mitigate by finding the right creators, right? That's exactly how you say. But, you know, when you're running 200 plus influencer program, it becomes extremely hard. Someone can go rogue on you, and you just have to be aware and, you know, be able to communicate with them, track what they're doing, you know, make sure that they're making their posts properly, that they're not, you know, and that they're not bashing other brands in the video, kind of like that's why you want to pre-approve the content ideally. But yeah, so get the right creators,
Right creators, and have a good relationship with them, because, you know, that example that you said, if you have to call that influencer, if they don't know who you are, they're not going to pick up the phone, and there's no reason for them to take anything down. But if you have an existing relationship with them and you have a partnership, right? That's a totally different conversation.
And that's a moment where you can shine for these influencers, right? You can shine instead of sending them, like, you know, the answer to a problem like that one is not a cease and desist letter, right? It's like hey, you know, like, sorry about that. We sent you there. Look, no worries. We'll get you some extra product. We'll take care of it. Again, apologies, right? And then they love the brand even more. And then they make a post. And that's what happened. The influencer ended up making the post and super excited and enthusiastic because we actually took care of her. And
Well, it's a good experience, right? It's a good customer experience, a good influencer experience. If we think about it, right? Like, we love to talk about, you know, bad experiences that we have. What is the ratio? It's like 10 times more than any good thing. Like, it's kind of like what reviews are as well too. Well, do you think there's a secret? Or maybe there's probably not a secret, but if there was any, what kind of tips or advice could you give for finding those right influencers to help represent your brand and tell your brand story?
So hobbyists are the best. Okay. That's one thing I learned. People that just have a hobby, whether it's crafts or, like, you know, redoing like old cars, whatever the hobby is, like, if you have the chance to build your brand around a hobby, that is amazing, right? Because these people are lovers of the craft. They just love what they do. And those are definitely the best influencers. I find that lifestyle influencers tend to have different personalities that can go rogue on you much easier, right? And then, you know, working with younger influencers, you have to understand you're working with younger influencers. So make sure you understand that. The 18-year-olds are not answering email. They're on text. Get that right and get their text message. And so just understanding, like, which influencers we're going after and how to communicate with them is probably the best thing to do.
But how do you find that right influencer?
Was the question, right? I did not answer. Yeah. I dodged that completely.
That's okay, because that's also really great insight as well too, because you can find them, but if you got to be able to talk to them in the right medium. So, but like, what's that key to finding that right influencer? Is there a checklist? Is there an outline? Is there a persona that I need to build out to help me really hone in? Because if you think about it, the world of creators and influencers are at your fingertips is massive. It can be very daunting for a brand to even know where they start.
Yeah. So here's my thought process on it. That's why the first phase exists in our process, where we're like, okay, first phase, we're going to pay you transactional, have the product. And then one of the criteria we evaluate is, well, we have three criteria essentially, is like, you know, sales, results, and then content quality, and then ease of communication. And ease of communication is really, it just transpires. Like, when people are easy to work with, you just know that they're going to be good in that relationship. And we look at that, and we only get people that have good communication skills to be ambassadors of a given program. And you just see it in the way they respond to emails, the way they interact, the way they text. It just shows, like, for that. So that's really one of the big criteria. And for all the collaborations with Manage, there's very little that went sour. So it it's a good criteria for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think that also leaning into developing that relationship, right? It does take more time, but it saves you time also in the end, because you don't have to chase someone down. You can openly, you know, communicate with them and get the right content, right? Like if something happens to miss the mark, it's a conversation. It's not a battle. So I think that that's incredibly helpful.
Relationships.
Absolutely. So we just chatted about like how to find that right influencer, some things that we can look at. Now, what do you think is the key to running an effective influencer campaign? Like what do I have to have? Is it just the right influencer and a good relationship? Or are there other like ingredients to the sauce?
I think it's actually quite the opposite way around, where you have to get strategy and positioning spot on when you run these campaigns. And what I mean by that is like, okay, how are we positioning our product? What are unique selling positions? What is the offer we're making and so forth? And additionally, I feel like we need to have buy-in from the influencers, because a lot of these influencers do multiple collaborations.
Yeah.
Right. But ideally, we want to be the brand that they talk about at a barbecue. Well, towards all the other brands that they're working with, right? It's like, oh, this brand just shines for me and I want to talk about this brand because they get it. So that's all about telling the story, right? And there's this, I mean, storytelling is such an overused word now, but that's true. Like if they understand what we're about and how, what the brand is about and all the goodwill that's behind it, then they buy into the story and that makes for better collaborations, and they're super excited about the brand and they'll even talk about us outside of social media. So,
It's funny that you say that storytelling is an overused word, because it definitely is. It's turning into almost a little bit of one of those buzzwords, like authenticity as well too. But you also
or influencer marketing.
Or influencer marketing, exactly. But you also can't get away from it, right? When push comes to shove, you know, the reason that storytelling is so compelling is because it creates an emotional connection between, you know, either a brand or a person and a person. And that emotion is what people respond to. It's why people make a purchase. Yes, they want that item, but you know, the need, the emotion to want it now, that like, that's what you're like plugging into when it comes to storytelling.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a total tactical question for you.
Go ahead.
And I had asked you this in our pre-interview as well too, because I'm always really interested in the same way that I'm interested in hearing how people define what an influencer is. I'd love to hear how you differentiate between affiliate marketing and influencer marketing, because I think there's a lot of overlap in between the two.
Yeah, so we see affiliates like, and I know this answer is because it's like a Venn diagram where they overlap in so many ways.
Absolutely.
So affiliates, and that might be from my SEO kind of background, for me is really someone that's all transactional, right? They know how to rank the article on Google or create that video, and like, you know, they know how to, you know, push that gear forward. And there's an exchange in value where if you drive a sale for me, I pay you out, right? And then where it becomes blurry is when an influencer can also be part of your affiliate program. So what do you call that? But essentially for us, influencers are just people that have a social media following and will share it without that kind of transactional component. That's really where we define it. But, you know, there's enormous overlap. Definitions are going to change from one stakeholder to another. And that's how we see it. Yeah.
Excellent. I also see it very similarly as well too. I very much so view affiliate marketing as very transactional. I think influencer marketing is very content driven and relationship driven. There's much more invested when it comes to influencer marketing in my eyes. You just happen to also be able to use affiliate links too, which is, I guess, an added bonus, right? Well, we're rounding out here and we're coming to the end. And what I always like to finish with is prediction time. So I would love to hear from you how you see influencer marketing or the influencer marketing space changing over the next 1 to 2 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, right now, it's especially in the micro influencer space. Let's set the assumptions. And then we're in a buyer's market. There's a lot more creators than there are brands. So many people are empowered to become great creators. What I see is brands relying on micro influencers, whatnot, more and more to create all their content, rely less on in-house studio content. I see these creators with, you know, the new iPhones and new, you know, Galaxies. The content quality is stunning, right? And you get all these courses on YouTube showing you how to create amazing content. and the content creators are so good there. I see brands, and we see it in our clients, that's the direction a lot of them are taking. I see brands powering their entire social media strategy by a small team of micro-influencers that operate under their brand on ongoing kind of recurring payouts where they request content to be created and so forth. Reason is that, you know, I don't know if brands have such a hard time right now on TikTok creating content for their pages. Yeah. Like, it's just like people are not touching it. It's like, okay, this thing is way too complicated. We have no one on our team that can create this. So, but we have brands that are getting micro influencers to actually create content for their page. And we're going to be hiring, the best ones out of them. And then, you know, make them the ongoing kind of ambassadors of the brand, and they're going to be running the TikTok page in a decentralized way. So I see that coming. I don't see TikTok getting rid of organic distribution as much as Facebook and Instagram did. I think that would just kill the magic behind TikTok. Yeah. But they will suffocate branded posts more and more. That's just how these platforms operate. So you go into paid media. So there's definitely going to be a big blend of paid media with influencer marketing, where the influencers are going to be the content creators. And then, yeah, that's where I see this space going. And I think a lot of these companies are also, so that's one thing we didn't even discuss, but I think a lot of companies are going to realize that they already have influencers that are buying their products. Like, hey guys, maybe you should leverage that, right? And then absolutely. I think they're going to realize that clients are there ready to buy and, you know, ready to be ambassadors. Like, they're super hyped up. They already bought your product. You didn't even reach out to them. So I really see brands waking up to like the world of like, hey, well, we already have a network of people that actually care about us. Like, let's tap into that. And then when you do that, follower count just diminishes. You don't care if they have 500 followers. I mean, they're your client and they care. And if they're cool among their friends, then they're going to drive sales. So
yeah, that's why I think that when you look at, you know, who is an influencer, how you identify or define it, it is very much so the engagement with their community, right? Like, they have to be able to make that connection. And sometimes you can have a ton of followers and just not engage. And sure, you'll get eyeballs, but not meaningful eyeballs, right? Like, people will scroll past that. What you're looking for is the thumb stopper, right? The thumb stopper in the scroll.
and the authentic buy-in, right? Because like, I was listening to a podcast the other day, go through the sponsorship at the beginning of the podcast, pretty standard. During the podcast, they mention a product, right? And I'm like, wow, this product probably got more value out of this podcast than the sponsorships at the beginning, because it was mentioned in the podcast and it comes in a non-advertisable way. And God, I massacred that. Yeah. So
I knew what you meant.
That was a moment for me. It's like, okay, yeah, we do become blind to what seems like an ad, right? And if it can be authentic and, you know, from people that actually care about your brand, it makes everything much better.
Yeah, I 150% agree. It's you get inundated with ads and they just become this white noise. But if it is someone that I follow in general and they've tried a new product, okay, well, all right, you've tried it out. Yeah. You're going to honestly tell me. A brand is obviously going to tell me, right? And a brand is obviously going to tell me what their unique selling position is. But there's nothing like, you know, I know even on Amazon, I'll scroll to the reviews and I'll look at the 5-star and then I'll look at the 1-star, right? Because I'm like, okay, I want to see what pissed them off so much about this particular product. And is that thing the deal breaker for me, right? But that's why people weigh so heavily on reviews. And for me, it's the same thing as influencer marketing, right? Like, if I've got someone on the other end that's telling me that they love something and they're ecstatic about it, I want to try it. Even if it's something that I wasn't going to normally buy, but I am the ideal person to purchase on social as well.
Exactly. And that's going to be a huge component with social shopping. Just, you know, they're going to try to capture more and more e-commerce revenue directly through Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and whatnot. So it's going to become easier and easier. And final note is, you know, if one influencer posts 5 times about you over a 3-month period, that's worth a lot more than a single post. Because at some point their audience is like, okay, that must be a legit collaboration, right? Because God, they're posting about it every other week. So, okay, this must be, I'll try it out. Give it a shot.
It means something. It means something. Yeah. Well, David, thank you so much for giving me so much of your time. You've left us with some insights and some tips, and I really appreciate you coming on.
It was a pleasure, Katia. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. If you walk away with one thing from this conversation with David, it would be that relationships with creators is key to success. I can appreciate his approach to finding the right influencer being a little bit more metric-based first and then qualitative to ensure that you've selected the right influencer for your campaign. But more than anything, I wholeheartedly agree that the relationship itself is the key to ensuring that you get authentic content, that you find those creators who can truly tell your story as a brand, and that in the long run, it's going to make your life easier. Easier to have tough conversations, easier to get feedback, easier to get content that converts. All of that easier adds up to time, and time is money. Am I right? I also found it interesting that his agency really focuses on micro influencers because they are the highest converting and easiest to work with. There's that word again. And while I can agree that those are both really good pros, I'm of that mindset that executing a strategy that is not as siloed can be beneficial for brands too. For example, use a macro influencer to get the eyeballs, and then the micro influencer to share the benefits, and then the nano influencer to convert. But I digress. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I would not mind 5 of them. And leave us a review. Connect with me on social. You can find me on LinkedIn. And if you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.